You can find inspiring stories almost anywhere. For instance, check out the co-founders of Girls Who Do Interiors. This Miami-based design company was started by three friends when they were still in school. And right from the start, they turned to Chase for Business for everything from banking and payment acceptance to credit cards. And they handle them all in one place with the Chase mobile app. It's so important to have that kind of help when you're just starting out. Learn more at chaseforbusiness.com. Make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JP Morgan Chase Bank NA, member FDIC.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
It all started with two federal agents who heard a rumor.
She mentions, well, there is this alleged murder to have taken place.
There was just one problem. They had no clue who the victim was.
We have to do our job, and we have to find out, who did they kill?
It had been 15 years since this alleged murder. Was it still possible to unearth the truth?
I used to watch the Unsolved Mystery shows, and I often thought about calling because I was like, this is not right. How can a person get killed and no one knows anything?
I'm Jake Halpern, and this is Deep Cover, The Nameless Man. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to hear the entire season right now, ad-free, subscribe to Pushkin Plus on our Apple Podcast show page or on pushkin.fm/plus.
Pushkin. Hi, I'm Eddie Alterman. Welcome to Detours, a special series from Car Show where we go on extended drives, run additional interviews, and sometimes put my sociological theories to the test. This week, I sit down with muscle car guru Mike Musto, who didn't totally agree with my hot take that the GTI was Generation X's GTO. Then, we talk about the ever-expanding category of the muscle car, the possibility of an electric version, and how car culture ultimately bridges all of these rigid taxonomies anyway.
Thanks, Mike, for joining us.
Yeah, of course. No, this is fun, man. I can do this all day.
Me too. But I'm glad we're meeting to discuss this hot topic.
Yes, absolutely.
So you listened to the episode. You heard my maybe specious argument. What do you think?
I think, you know, there's definitely merit there. I think that for, if you were a kid and you grew up in the, you know, the 80s and the 90s, and you were, I think a lot of it has to be based on, one, your demographic, two, your location. Because I, like where I grew up, like when you're talking like Brooklyn, Queens, Long Island, a GTI was like, okay, like it's small, doesn't have a V8. It's, mind you, better in every single way than any Mustang, Camaro, or Grand National on the street. It just, well, I'm going to get crushed for saying that. But that's the truth, right? It was compact. It was fast. It was this. But it didn't have what I was looking for in a car.
Balls.
Well, you can't even say that because it had balls, but it had different balls, right? It had different
right,
balls.
Right.
It had, the balls were more compact, and they were more like ball bearings as
tighter to the body.
Tighter to the body, yes. That's
so,
correct.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in this Midwest Texas, John Hughes country, you know. Mm-hmm. we didn't want to drive the cars our dads drove because our dads had Bonnevilles and Catalinas and then 442s. And, you know, so we wanted something that was like not homegrown. We wanted, you know, something that was a little bit more cosmopolitan in a way.
Right. Of course. Exactly. Of course. Yeah. I mean, we, you know, it's interesting. Like when at that time I was on, I was out on Long Island and going kind of back and forth to the city and to Brooklyn and stuff like that. And it, street racing was still very big, right? So you still had the guys with the Grand Nationals and the Camaros and the Fox Body Mustangs and the, you know, F Body Trans Ams that were just coming out in the early 90s where people were freaking out. It was always like the, I had a good friend, my friend Paul, he had a GTI. And he would just look at us like, why are you wasting time with this, with these big stupid things? And we were just like, because they're amazing and they're huge and they're fucking V8s and macho and stuff like that. And he's like, all right, like, I don't get it, but that's fine. But there was the one thing that the GTI couldn't do. Couldn't do rear wheel drive burnout. Couldn't do a donut.
Exactly.
And it was like, well, useless, useless car if I can't do a donut.
Well, my one sort of quibble with that is if you're on the snow, you could handbrake Revector really easily. You could just jam that thing up and slide around. But it was not like a, it was not power oversteer. It was not, you know, light up the tires and make a lot of smoke.
Right. Correct. But, you know, a massively fun car. And it, I think it was, I think the GTI was my first real revelation into what a front wheel drive car could be from a performance perspective. It, I remember the first time I drove my buddy's car and I was like, oh my God, it was just because there was nothing, there was no bad part. Everything was like, oh, this is fabulous. And with it, with, you know, a third of the horsepower.
Right. Cause it was light and the steering wasn't that corrupted. There wasn't terrible torque steer because you had lower horsepower. You weren't like maxing it out and there was good grip up front.
Again, I think a lot of it has to do with where you were at the time when the GTI was introduced. Right. I think that's where kind of the impression lies. And there just weren't that many. I mean, I was fortunate where I had a couple of buddies and I had one whose father was a Volkswagen dealer. And so he would always bring GTIs home and he would get the latest edition, latest model. And, you know, the muscle cars were still faster. There's no question about it. I mean, in a straight line, they were still faster. But when it came down to going left and going right, my God, the GTI. And I think at that point it had like 195 series tires or like a max of like a 215, which was huge back in the day. It was an eye opener. And it was, I think, one of the first cars that I was like, oh, this is what performance driving is supposed to be. And it was like that little light bulb went off. But back then I just didn't want to admit it because I just didn't want to admit it. You know what I mean?
Right.
My friends would be like, you don't know what you're talking about, Musto. You're the worst. We hate you now. So,
well, speaking about that, like that sort of the credibility factor, you know, like I'm saying muscle cars are a very specific thing. Cause I've gotten roasted so many times for like calling the Dodge Charger a muscle car. They're like, it's not a muscle car, dude. It's got four doors.
You know what? I think the definition has, and the muscle car was always what? It was always intermediate sedan, biggest motor you could clump into it. That's a muscle car, right?
Yeah. Oh, and kind of a body type that doesn't really exist that much anymore, or if at all, the two-door sedan.
That's exactly correct. Sure. I mean, when you saw, you know, when the GTO first came out, and then you had like, you know, the Le Mans, and then you had the Chargers, and you had the, you know, Barracudas and Mustangs were more pony cars.
But Chevelles. But
Chevelle, Monte Carlos, things like that. They were all muscle cars. And I think the definition changed a little bit based on the body. Like I remember like one of my cars that I had when I was back in New York, I had a 69 Pontiac Grand Prix SJ with a 428. And that thing was a stump puller. I mean, that it was gold on gold on gold. It was triple gold. And it had 14-inch wheels with wheel covers on it. But my God, it had 500 pound-feet of torque. And it would roast the back tires for like a quarter mile. But people would be like, well, it's not a muscle car. I'm like, are you insane?
I know. Like, I know.
It's a luxury muscle car, but the definition is still very much there.
Right. There's a weird orthodoxy to the whole thing of like, no, it's just got to really conform to this thing. And to me, it's beautiful that like the definition has expanded, you know.
Yeah.
Like I get into, sometimes I get into like I got this RS e-tron GT out here.
Oh yeah,
that's a muscle ridiculous car. That thing's insane.
This is the one part that people fail to understand. And the purists get really mad. They always yell at me all the time. I'm like, the Germans make some of the best muscle cars ever created. So this is back in my East Coast days, I had an E39 M5.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I don't care who you are. 5-liter V8, 400 horsepower, manual transmission.
Rear drive.
Power slides for days. Rear drive. Burnouts, donuts. That was the quintessential German muscle car, right? The E55 AMG.
Totally.
Oh my God. Totally. Even the, you know, when the RS6 came out.
RS6 with the V10, with the Lamborghini V10 in it.
Oh my God. Fabulous.
Right. It took an engine from higher up the food chain, higher up the line from the Lamborghini, threw it in a sedan, instant muscle car.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, again, the purists get all pissed off because the purists say, you know, it has to be American, blah, blah, blah. Now, listen, Americans, we invented the muscle car. There's no question about that. Right.
Right.
And we have in a sense kind of perfected it and set the blueprint for the rest of the world to follow. The rest of the world has their own ideas on what a muscle car is. And more importantly, what it can aspire to be and evolve to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think many different countries have put their own spin on it. Obviously the Germans with the M cars, AMGs, stuff like that. You know, you look at things like, you know, the Holdens and stuff that they had in Australia, and granted they're GMs, but they're straight muscle cars. The Utes, that's a muscle truck. Like,
totally.
You can't argue that. And like, I'll die on that hill. I'll go up against anybody that wants to fight me on that.
I love that. But Musto, I also love that you're like, you know, it's got to do donuts. It's got to be able to do donuts. It's got
to
be able
to do donuts.
It's got to break traction, right? That's the key.
Yeah, like everybody, I used to have I've had a couple of Trans Ams, and my last Trans Am was an 81 301 turbo Trans Am, which was a proper shitbox. And then I had a 79 with a 403 in it. And I'm like, they're not muscle cars. Everybody's like, you got such a kick-ass muscle car. I'm like, it won't break the tires loose to save its life. So no, I'm like 185 horsepower does not constitute a muscle car. Now, like, a 455, like a bullnose Trans Am with a 455.
Super
now
Duty.
We're talking. Super right. Duty. Okay. I can get behind that. But, you know, there was this time period in the kind of the later 70s up to the early 80s where it was stickers. It was bravado from a visual perspective, but there was nothing under the hood.
No.
So they transformed into really nice boulevard cruisers. And that's okay.
Yeah.
But I would never put those into the muscle car category. I just wouldn't. So, you know, but they're, you know, I think muscle cars are such an ingrained part of American history and of the automotive world as well. And you know, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, when the import craze kind of came on, right? And you had kind of Fast and the Furious. That was such a pivotal moment, I think, because it introduced, you know, I can't really say kids because, you know, it was more than 20 years ago. But it changed the perception and introduced what muscle car was to a whole new generation of people.
Right. And I remember taking a Focus RS from Europe before it was on sale in the US. So the RS in that generation was never on sale in the US. It was a special car that Ford had there.
Yep.
And I took it to the Pomona Roadster show.
Oh, my God.
And people just like wanted to light it on fire. They were so pissed.
Right. But that's
like,
good.
How are you doing? Right. Right.
That's good. You have to, you got to shake people up. And like, I never understood the whole purist thing. I never understood the whole, like, I only like Ford or I only like GM or I only like Porsche. I'm like, well, that you just want tacos every single day for the rest of your life. What is the
exactly?
Why?
What the ride is the spice of life.
It totally is. And it's, you know, these people out there that just, they want to die on this mountain of Ford or Chevy or Ford. I'm like, get over yourself, man. What are you thinking?
I know. It is so provincial. It's like, that's all they've been exposed to. So like, and they don't want to open their minds to like, hey, maybe, you know, BMW M5 is the greatest thing you've ever driven, and it fits you perfectly. And that's, you know, you would love it, but they never open themselves up to that experience.
No. And I think, you know, automobiles are very much like food, right? You have to be willing to go outside your comfort zone. You have to be able to try something. If you don't like it, that's okay. You don't have to like it. I don't have to like sushi. I don't have to like steak, but I'm going to try it to make my own decision.
Exactly. Right? No, you got to. It's a life half lived otherwise.
Yes, I completely agree. You know, but the cool part is now with the technology, everything is evolving to the point where, you know, speed is no longer really relevant. Because with EVs and stuff like that, you have this, you know, petrol is never going to catch up to EVs. We know that, you know, when you're going 0 to 60 in 2 seconds in an EV, I don't know if that's, I wouldn't categorize that as any type of a muscle car, because it's, you know, like a Tesla, because you lose the visceralness of it.
Yeah. No vibration, no sound. No.
Yeah. And I think it has to have some type of theater behind it.
Interesting.
And if there's no theater, there's no anything. And it was last year we had gone to an event up at Sonoma Raceway, and it was one of the first kind of e-events, you know, only events, performance events. And the autocross was going on behind me, and the drag races were going on in front of me. The problem is you would hear tires squeal, right? And that's it. And there were beautiful cars ripping around the racetrack. But as soon as you turn around, you could ignore it. And as soon as you could ignore it, it disappears. It's forgettable. And if you really like cars, if you like cars for what they offer, I think you have to have that theater in there somewhere that kind of keeps you interested.
More of my chat with Mike Musto after the break.
Small business owners, this one's for you. Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Join hosts Ben Walter, CEO of Chase for Business, and Tanya Nebo, a lawyer and business consultant, on these storytelling journeys of trials, tribulations, and triumphs that hinged on a single event, a split-second decision, or even a stroke of luck. Whether the story is about a warehouse going up in flames or a former partner stealing a whole roster of clients, each episode will showcase the grit, determination, and resourcefulness a small business owner needed to turn a pivotal situation into a springboard for success. Listen to The Unshakables now and learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase. Make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A., member FDIC. Copyright 2024, JPMorgan Chase & Company.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
It all started with two federal agents who heard a rumor.
She mentions, well, there is this alleged murder to have taken place.
There was just one problem. They had no clue who the victim was.
We have to do our job, and we have to find out, who did they kill?
It had been 15 years since this alleged murder. Was it still possible to unearth the truth?
I used to watch the Unsolved Mystery shows, and I often thought about calling, because I was like, this is not right. How can a person get killed and no one knows anything?
I'm Jake Halpern, and this is Deep Cover, The Nameless Man. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to hear the entire season right now, ad-free, subscribe to Pushkin Plus on our Apple Podcast show page or on pushkin.fm/plus.
We're back with Mike Musto.
I think from a muscle car perspective, though, we are at the last, bastion of muscle carness. And the reason I say that is that I don't know. So Dodge is coming out with an electric muscle car, right? Mm-hmm. The e-muscle car.
Yeah.
If anybody's going to knock it out of the park, it's going to be them. They have to. They have to knock it out of the park, or it's finished. It's dead, right?
They have to throw so much power at that thing to overcome the weight of the battery, the mass of the battery. Yep. I'm kind of excited to see what happens there because it has to be in excess of 1,000 horsepower. It just does.
It has to be that, but it's got to have theater. It has to have theater. Like if I don't walk up to it, I'm like, all right, this is kind of cool. And if they hit the starter button and there's no sound, yeah. And I'm all for artificial rumbling. I don't care what you do, but make me go, oh, that's okay.
Make it sound like a scalded banshee.
Give me something that makes me understand. Like, I want to get into that and I want to drive it and I want to have that theater and I want the hairs on the back of my neck to stand up. Right.
That's right.
I don't know how you do that with an EV because I've never experienced one that does that yet. I just have it.
I know. Right. I mean, they go really quick and straight line, like Tesla Plaid, kind of amazing, but then it tapers off and it doesn't make a noise. And, you know, I don't know. They got to do it. Otherwise, you know, are these Hellcat V8s the last of the crazy ass?
I think so. I think that, you know, Dodge, they played it right. And they played it right due to lack of funds.
Yeah.
Right? That's
exactly.
GM and Ford had all the money. Dodge was like, we really don't have any money. But we've got this monster motor. And it's been their game since the 1960s. Right?
I know. And they have this old, basically, Mercedes E-Class chassis that they inherited from Daimler Chrysler that goes back to 96, and they just keep evolving and working. Like a lack of resources is the surest way to get something cool or innovative. Like Mini, for example, they had like no money when they started out.
Yeah, perfect example.
But the marketing was incredible because they had to. They had restrictions and they had to be smart about it. And I think you're sort of seeing the same thing there. Like, you know, what do we got, guys? We've got this big, stupid gas guzzling V8. We've got this old, expensive, rickety Mercedes chassis.
Yeah.
Let's just make it nuts. And
it ridiculous. Yeah. And let's call Musto because he's going to love it. He's that guy.
And everyone does. Yeah. Everyone does. And I mean, we've got a serious Hellcat problem in Detroit. We do. They're everywhere and they're loud as fuck and they're incredible. But I can hear them from my house. You hear them ripping down Telegraph. It's such a distinct sound.
But do you remember in the 80s when the Fox bodies were out?
Yeah.
The 5 LX Fox body GT, you could hear a 5-liter Mustang from 7-8 blocks away, and you knew exactly what you're like, oh, it's Mustang. I knew exactly what it was.
Exactly. Right? It just had that sonic signature that, like, you could tell what an air-cooled Porsche sound like.
That's right.
And but when that, like, you hear a Hellcat like rip into the higher revs, it's percussive and it's crazy and it sounds like somebody just smashing through a wall.
Oh dude, it sounds like war. And I mean, that's the most addictive, like, that the supercharged, like, I give them credit, man. I really do, because they just capitalized on it. And they said, you know what? Bigger, better. It's like the Bionic car, right? Bigger, better, stronger, faster, whatever that slogan was back in the day. And they've recaptured what the muscle car was, right? Mustang and Camaro morphed into straight sports cars, right?
100%. Like
sports cars.
M3 911 fighters, you know, ZL1 Camaro, unbelievable track car, punches so far above its weight. It is a true racing car.
Yeah.
It's not a drag car. It's like, it can do everything.
Right. I think the Dodge cars are just straight out like, nope, straight line. We're good.
Yeah. We're going to be dumb here.
Well, yeah. And I mean, you, do they turn? Sure. I mean, I've raced them. Like I raced them in One Lap of America and then many, many times. And like, you know, you got 4,500 pounds, right? So at some point physics just throws the middle finger up at you and goes, yeah, that ain't happening. Like, it's a good effort, but that ain't happening.
Right. We're going to try, but probably not going to work.
Nah. And that's okay. Because, like, again,
don't waste your time putting dive planes on that Challenger.
No. Absolutely not. No. Just go straight.
It
go
is
fast. Exactly. Go straight. Do burnouts. Do whatever you want. Like, you know.
It is amazing.
But that's a muscle car to me. Right.
And there's still a market for it, still a huge appetite for it. And the amazing thing is muscle cars were such white guy stuff so long, like the whitest white guy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's so multicultural. It's great.
It's the great equalizer. And I've always said the automobile is the greatest equalizer in the world.
I mean, I see it on Woodward. I see it on 696. I see guys out in Challengers and Chargers, Hellcats and Demons,
yeah,
just ripping it up, having the time of their lives. And
yeah,
that's really what it's about. And, you know, like if you were to think about what a midsize, speaking of this evolution idea, like if you were to think about what a midsize sedan is, right? In the 60s, what was a midsize sedan? It was two-door, small V8 or V6 rear-wheel drive.
Yeah. I mean, like my 68 Charger was an intermediate. That was a midsize.
Right. So what's a midsize car now? Midsize car is a Honda Accord. Four doors.
Honda Accord, Toyota Camry.
Front drive, hybrid, right?
Correct.
But we still call it like, oh, that's a midsize family car, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's changed so much, changed with the times. Corvette's another great example. Like you think about the first, you know, C1, what was that? Blue Flame 6, right?
Yep.
Very, very kind of modest performance car, more like a Thunderbird.
That's right.
And now look at, like, now it's a McLaren beater, but it's still a Corvette.
Yeah. Well, it's the evolutionary process is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
And I think people, they get hung up on generally one specific model that was relevant at the time it came out to the time that they were at in their life, right? It made an impression upon them in one circumstance. And for whatever reason, it just kind of red stamped in their head. Like, this is the only one that is good and whatever the case is. But evolution is a wonderful thing. When you see how these manufacturers have evolved these cars, it's okay that a definition changes. It's okay that technology advances. And it's okay if you don't like it. That's fine. But you do have to accept it, right? Anybody who doesn't accept it basically is just lying to themselves, right? They're just...
Like, how many vehicles can get away with not changing? I can only think of one, the Jeep. Everything else, right? I mean, 911 has to change. 911
that's
water cooled. You know, the Accord has had to change dramatically. Hybridization and all that, you know, everything has to keep evolving or else it falls off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
Well, this is amazing, Mike, as always. You always deliver. This is fucking awesome. Thanks for spending the time. So do I.
Oh, anytime you want to rap about cars, dude, I'm all in. I love it.
Thanks for listening to that conversation with Mike Musto. You can find more of Mike on the Hemmings Hot Rod Barbecue podcast, which includes a recent interview with me. I'm Eddie Alterman.
It all started with two federal agents who heard a rumor.
She mentions, well, there is this alleged murder to have taken place.
There was just one problem. They had no clue who the victim was.
We have to do our job, and we have to find out, who did they kill?
It had been 15 years since this alleged murder. Was it still possible to unearth the truth?
I used to watch the Unsolved Mystery shows, and I often thought about calling, because I was like, this is not right. How can a person get killed and no one knows anything?
I'm Jake Halpern, and this is Deep Cover, The Nameless Man. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to hear the entire season right now, ad-free, subscribe to Pushkin Plus on our Apple Podcast show page or on pushkin.fm/plus.